You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. I'm your host, Captain Dean, on location once again at beautiful Spencer's Coffee, where I'm drinking a Sprite, and my guest is drinking a Coca-Cola, and his name is Eli Whitaker. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Hi, I'm doing all right.
How are you doing?
I'm good. What about you?
I'm doing all right. It's good to have you here. We've talked back and forth a few times about doing one of these, and you seemed ready, and I think you have a really cool story to tell.
For sure.
And I appreciate you meeting me here to tell the story, because I'm glad that I'm the host that gets to capture it. And I'm eager to hear it, too, because before we started rolling, I kind of told you I know a little bit about your past.
Right.
So I'm interested to hear a lot of more, maybe, detail about your upbringing and stuff and music, but we always start with the wonderful question of where are you from?
In Edmonton, Kentucky.
Were you born there?
Yes.
You were actually born in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
I didn't realize it was had stuff like that.
Well,
they have a hospital?
Well, no. Technically in Glasgow.
Okay, so you were born in Glasgow. Okay.
Yes.
But from Edmonton.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Again, these are two neighboring towns and everything, so they're very connected.
Yeah.
And you're obviously very connected in this music scene, and you're also a, I don't know how to phrase it, but your passion for music is overwhelmingly strong. That's obvious. Like, from the moment I met you, but even before I met you, it was clear, you know,
right.
Like that music was a big part of your life, and your upbringing clearly tells that picture.
Yep.
So, growing up in Edmonton, tell the story about how you got into music and who you were around to even be inspired to get into music.
Well, honestly, I owe a lot of it to my dad's band. They got together in high school, and they were a band called Trip.
Yeah.
I was around. And then, of course, everybody around here owes a lot of it to Blackstone Cherry.
Yes.
And the Kentucky Headhunters. I mean, that's just a given.
But, and you know these guys,
yes,
personally.
Yeah.
Are you related, or is there just deep connection?
There's just deep connections there.
Yeah.
And I owe a lot of that where I'm at now to those boys, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I had a feeling that would be the case.
Yeah.
But what was his band into? Like, what were they doing? And obviously, was that something you were raised around growing up?
That was what I was
raised
around.
You witnessed band practice all the time?
Well,
Stuff of that nature?
Yeah. They weren't around too much longer after I was born.
Oh,
that's
okay.
Where I was. That's what I was around in my early years.
Okay.
So a lot of that comes from, I guess, just being around that environment. And then once I got into Blackstone Cherry and introduced to them and the Headhunters, that's where
Well, the interesting thing about Blackstone Cherry is they formed the year you were born.
I know. It's always been kind of weird.
But by the time I was three, I have memories, vivid memories, of being 3 years old and being around music and listening to the radio.
Right.
I'm assuming that's probably the case with you.
Honestly, yeah.
So
it is.
You got to witness their early days, like first album, second album, as a toddler.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then by the time Devil in the Deep Blue Sea and, you know, Magic Mountain and all that stuff, you're kind of a young man, teenager area, right?
Right.
So, I mean, you've grown up with this band because you're literally the same age as the band.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. It's weird to think about like
It's
that,
pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it is cool.
But you have a connection to not only Fred Young, but John Fred Young.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure it's safe to say you've got a deep connection with Andrew from Otis, correct?
Otis, yes.
And I'm assuming, again, I'm assuming a lot because I'm bits and pieces on your history, but growing up, was drumming your main priority? Was that the one thing that called to you?
Yeah.
Did you ever, like, tinker with anything growing up, like piano lessons or anything like that?
No. It was always just drums from the start.
So what kind of music, aside from that, which clearly was a dominant factor.
Right.
What else was in your like household, and what were you getting inspiration from?
I got a lot of inspiration from Guns N' Roses mm-hmm. and Led Zeppelin. Just listened to it around the house.
So these were records in the house.
Right.
So it was pretty obvious that you were raised in a very good environment.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, they did good.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, at that age, and of course in the year 2000, you know, 4, 5, 6, right. I mean, so much music was out by that point.
Mm.
And you were getting to capture all these elements from not only what was in the house, but from knowing these guys and seeing them grow as musicians, but also the influences that they had clearly came out and were presented to you, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you really got it all angles.
Yeah, I really did.
Yeah. What really stood out to you the most? I mean, obviously, drumming is the one thing, but what was it about drums and all of this music that was coming at you? Like, how did that just snap one day and go, that's what I want to do? What was the turning point for you, and do you even remember?
Most of it was just the drive and the passion that some of these guys have had mm-hmm. getting into it and seeing the outcomes that can possibly come out of being on that.
Well, yeah, you're around successful
musicians. Yeah, yeah. And just, you know,
just hanging out with some dive bar band that never goes anywhere.
Yeah, just seeing what they can achieve and seeing that that's something they can do mm-hmm. and achieve that they love doing in the first place. Right. It's always been my dream, having something like that.
And it's pretty obvious that I've seen photos of you when you were a child getting drum lessons from John Fred, especially. I've seen that one.
Right.
I think I've seen something with Andrew as well, if I'm not mistaken.
There's been a couple, yeah.
Okay.
John Fred gave me the lessons, but I took a lot of influence from Andrew, and he kind of took me under his wing.
Right.
So that's where a lot of my influence from him comes from.
Right. I noticed that when you've been playing recently, I've seen him at the shows.
Yeah.
Kind of like a proud moment of your friend, your mentor, in a way, almost like a student, teacher kind of thing. Yeah. You know, he's beaming with pride out in the audience. So that's got to be a cool feeling, man.
It really is.
To I know that you know Fred Young. I don't know if you had a lot of hands-on dealing with him.
Not really, no.
But obviously, he passed a lot of his knowledge on to John Fred. So I would think that John Fred and Andrew alone had to be the two dominant forces of personal interaction, not listening to a record of some band, you know.
Like
these guys were there in your house and saw the potential and the talent in you and obviously believed in you enough to take time and sit with you. So how long did this journey take, and when did you get a pair of drumsticks and even start?
I think I've got my first drum kit when I was 12. So
I was expecting it earlier for some reason.
Well, yeah, I was always into it, and I showed an interest into it, mm-hmm. but I didn't really get that drive to want to play drums until I was about 12.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a common age.
Right.
But for some reason, I guess with your background, I was expecting, like, I was 4 years old, and I had a 5-piece Ludwig drum set.
I wish.
But obviously everything that you needed or the inspiration of music in general was all kind of there.
Yeah.
And it came to you and things happened naturally. It wasn't forced or rushed or anything of that nature, correct?
Right. I just kind of found that path on my own and I was never pushed into it or anything. So
when you're 12... Are we going to jump out of anything, or is there anything that stands out in your youth prior to that moment, before your teenage years? Like, what happened musically?
Listening and being around local music and Blackstone Cherry and all of them.
What else stands out? Obviously, being a child in that area, that may have been all you saw. I don't think you would have come out and gone to a lot of shows or anything, right?
I didn't at that age. No.
There wasn't like any outdoor festivals in Glasgow or anything of that nature?
Not that I can remember, no.
You never know.
Yeah, I mean, there's always something in Glasgow.
That's true. Yeah. And you may have been there.
Maybe.
So it was just there. It was a dominant thing in your life.
Yeah.
And music by the time you get to 12 years old, you're like, I want to play drums. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's clear that it was serious.
It was.
Like, it wasn't something you picked up and fiddled around with. To this day, you are the most... How do I word this? Which I've told you this before. When I watch you play, it's almost like you are a scientist. You're concentrating. Your eyes are watching every move. You're not jumping around and acting dumb and beating and banging stuff for showing off purposes, if that's the right way to put it. You're so in the moment of playing that I think the entertainer factor, or whatever you want to call it, you don't really have to do that. You know,
it's like, not really as prevalent.
Your playing is so serious that it's like that's what you're doing, and so I guess that's the way you were raised.
Yeah,
it really have a lot to do with that,
right? And just that the showmanship is a factor of live music, but I just. With me kind of being new into the scene, in a sense, in front of a crowd, I'm just kind of finding my ways and such on stage.
There's drummers that are wild. Look at Keith Moon. And then look at Charlie Watts. To me, you're the Charlie Watts type of drummer. You play the song, play for the song, and you do your job without twirling your sticks and... being flashy, and you know what I mean? Like, there's that world of difference between the two, and that's what I'm always trying to refer to as the serious drummer, but yet the passion of it is extremely there when you talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that you talk about music, from my perspective, is you talk as if you're the one that stands up and lights your shit on fire and starts throwing it around. But you don't. You're very locked in and you concentrate. It's really cool to watch because I went through the phase of idiotic stuff and being an idiot and being a fool and all that stuff. I don't see that in you. So it's really cool at your age, you know, to be that serious and that professional already. But I can point it to your background.
Yeah.
So what was your childhood like growing up with them?
Just going back and forth to shows and catching them whenever I can and just being around that environment and just basic kid life at that age aside from that. But
did you ask for lessons or did you just kind of watch and learn?
For a little bit there, I watched and learned and just kind of picked up what I could from John Fred, but... then I finally just got that drive for it, and we mentioned lessons, and he said, yeah, we'll do it. Mm-hmm. And then that was that, and we started me out on just rudiments, et cetera, and then kind of got into the more feel and passion for it, and then went from there. And that's, I mean, I owe a lot to John Fred.
I knew that you did, and I wasn't sure on the role or the I guess the level of involvement between John Fred and Andrew, like, was it kind of a mutual thing?
It was.
They both kind of just helped you and pointed you in the right direction. It wasn't necessarily like a weekly structured thing of
whenever I had lessons with John Fred, it was once a week.
Okay.
And just kind of got me doing whatever I could with what I had at the time. And then Andrew influenced me a lot, just seeing him on stage and picking up various
and clearly
things.
You were there in the beginnings of Otis. What did he do, which I know him, but for some reason I don't know a lot about his background. What did he do prior to Otis? Because Andrew is a phenomenal drummer.
He really is.
And almost, like, I compared him to, in my opinion, if you're familiar with Cozy Cole... or Art Blakely, and like, he's got the jazz element, but the hard hitting jazz element, like, it's solid, but it's got flair. Yeah. It's kind of a strange like combination of those two
it's
worlds.
It's a mix,
but
yeah.
He is amazing.
He really is.
And what did he do prior to Otis? Which Otis really took off in, I want to say 2010?
Somewhere around in there, yeah.
I kind of know a little bit of that history, and I know that Boone has an episode of the Sound Atlas, so I'm pretty sure he explains mm-hmm. that. I think Steve did too, but... do you know much about that?
I'm not for sure.
As a kid, you weren't really...
I wasn't for sure of all of that. I know Otis went through a couple previous drummers before Andrew, but I'm not for sure what Andrew did personally in between Otis and...
Guess I'm going to have to interview him and find
out. Maybe, yeah.
He's busy now, so I don't know if I can get him. Those guys are doing great.
I know, they
really
are.
It's been a phenomenal thing to sit back and watch, because I met Steve Jewell when he was 16.
Oh, really?
And to see where he's at today is like, I mean, he was that good at 16.
Yeah, he really was.
It was a really impressive thing to watch. But what a great band. And both of those bands, honestly, speaking on a local music level, musically speaking, band-wise, what they've done to come from this area to be a part of this music scene, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah,
but as a drummer, you got personal and was given these tools, Bobby's guys, you know, and these phenomenal drummers that are not necessarily your peers, but, you know, just the generation ahead of you, I guess, in a way. That's got to be a cool feeling to look
at.
Have you ever stepped back and looked at it from outer body and been like, wow, how cool is this, you know?
Yeah, just to see some of the festivals that both of those bands to, and I'm like, wow, I got drum lessons from the drummer back there. I mean, it's a phenomenal feeling. It really
I'm sure it is. It's got to be cool. And but you're not related, correct?
No.
There's no family connection? No. Okay. I don't know why. I guess maybe I think there is, but I don't think there is.
Mm-mm.
There's not.
No.
But obviously you are like family.
Pretty much, yeah.
Because I see a lot of pictures of you guys together and holidays and whatnots, you know. And I know you get to go to the shows and you've gone on the road with them.
Yeah.
So it must be cool to experience that.
Yeah, it really is.
At such a young age. I mean, I remember you graduated high school and then you hopped on the tour bus and went on the road with Black Sun Cherry.
Yeah. A couple months later, I joined Wolf Island Cosmonauts.
That's
so
true.
It's...
And we will get to that, obviously. I'm saying the word assuming a lot, so I sound like a moron, so I'm sorry about that. I'm assuming that prior to Wolf Island Cosmonauts, you said you picked up the drumsticks and became serious to focus on drumming and learning drumming at 12. Yeah. But if I'm not mistaken, you were in Wolf Island Cosmonauts by the time you were 18?
Yeah.
Or 19. Are you 19?
No, I'm 18.
You're 18 now. Okay.
Yeah.
So it was 17, 18.
I was 18.
So it wasn't that long.
No.
Once you got going and with the lessons and everything, were you ever in like a garage band or a group of dudes that would come together and just jam for fun? Was there anything of that nature?
I mean, me and my dad sometimes would jam because he was the bassist in the band I referred to earlier, Trip.
Yeah.
And sometimes me, him, and Stephen Cleveland from Luther.
Okay.
Would jam here.
Good Lord, man. I mean.
Yeah.
That's kind of important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
What a remarkable story. I knew you had some cool stuff. I didn't realize that Stephen was involved.
Yeah.
That's really neat.
But aside from just little jam sessions here and there, I never got into anything serious.
It's really interesting, though, to think about that because that means that whole time was solid focus on learning the instrument, finding your voice, and finding out your ability without being distracted with band drama and going through five bands and having breakups and dealing with crap and getting, like, I think some of us get out and start playing gigs and shows get double booked and you get irritated and you run into problems, you know, and it can cause that mind game thing, you know, and I think you got to bypass all that.
Right.
But I mean, the story is extremely sad and extremely unfortunate because you technically replaced one of your brothers and one of your mentors also in drumming, which was Cody Glass. Yeah. And I had the absolute honor of being able to interview him for this. And that was hard.
It was rough. It really was.
And I've said it before, and I talked to Lucas, and we all agreed that that was the right decision for the band to make. And it was the right decision for you to do it. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned John Fred, we've mentioned Andrew, but Cody had, he told his story, which anyone that knows him knows the story. He played guitar, singer-songwriter, and he was really great at that. But he really wanted to be a drummer, and Ricky Hodge helped him get into that and kind of helped push him into that. And he became an excellent drummer.
Yeah.
And he, he would message me and call me sometimes and just, am I getting this right? Listen to this, check this out. And he was very much a student of wanting to not necessarily change instruments, but if he was going to play drums, he wanted to play drums well.
Yeah.
You got to kind of witness a lot of that.
I did.
And be there almost as if a fly on the wall to watch that happen. Mm-hmm. But you're very close to him.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us would agree, and I'm hoping you would agree, that it was almost like a big brother connection for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't want to get into the details of the accident and all of that stuff because I know that's a terrible thing that we don't really want to talk about. But let's talk about the positive things of what Cody did for you as a mentor. What was it like to still be pretty young and gaining your abilities in drumming and to have not only two wonderful people giving you guidance and instruction, but then for Cody to come in and physically be there all the time?
Well, I mean, I owe a lot of my influence to Cody as well, because he's the one who kind of put the foot in the door for me and said, we've got to get you on stage, we've got to get you jamming with people. And there for a little bit, it was me, Cody, and Ricky Hodge.
And yes,
we jammed for a little bit over at Ricky's, and he was a lot of the reason why I was able to have the playability aspect of things that I have now, and just getting thrown into a jam session like that, and then just going from being able to pick up on guitar riffs and bass riffs and put drums behind it. And it's just the influence that he gave me as a brother and as a mentor. That's priceless.
It's absolutely priceless. Again, it's one of those things where it's like I look at what those three alone have done for you. You have had three of the nicest people in this music scene, three of the best drummers in this music scene, hand you like the keys to the car, and trust you with it, and you're driving it now. And you literally are driving it. I get choked up just thinking about it. You were given the opportunity, which there was no other option. Robbie and Lucas wanted to go forward. They had built a great band with Cody, and they had just released the album when his accident happened and he passed away. So I don't think they even really had to think about it. The way it was kind of told to me was it was like there was no thought. It just it made sense for everyone, and there wasn't a need to even discuss it. What was it like for you to be this young, to lose someone so meaningful, and have the opportunity to keep their memory alive, but yet be yourself and step into that role?
I mean, it was just a weird feeling because losing one of my mentors, that took a big hit on me.
Oh, absolutely.
Mentally.
And you're so young.
Yeah, encountering something like that so young and so tragic.
Which, you know, I don't think age and maturity helps, but
right.
I would think someone 40 could handle something like that a lot better than someone fresh out of high school that's not really had significant loss yet, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know your personal and private stuff either, but just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was such a brotherly person in your life.
He really was.
That's how I looked at it. I think a lot of us did, because you guys seemed inseparable at one point. Especially when Wolf Island started rolling, you know. Yeah. I noticed how much you were involved.
Yeah.
And he was always posting things on Facebook, and you were there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you were there to watch the band kind of start, and you were there to help keep the band going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I find it to be such an honorable thing.
It really is. I mean, for me to have been so close to Cody and figure out a way to carry on his legacy and the memories that he created, I didn't want to let that go and just tap her off. So,
and the best thing, in my opinion, is when you do play the songs that he was a part of writing and recording, he's there.
He is.
Like, when those songs are being played on stage and you're playing them, he's there.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as those songs play, he will always be around. Mm-hmm. And that's such a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
So it was an extremely difficult thing for you to go through.
Yeah.
But you have powered through it. All of you have powered through it. I'm assuming his family must have just been humbled and given the blessing for this to occur. I mean, it's not like they would have probably stopped it from happening, but you know, that must have been a very difficult and moving thing to go through.
It was difficult.
It's hard to put it in words, really, when you talk about it. I had a hard time talking to interviewing Lucas. I was like, I don't even know how to word all this stuff. You know, it's such a delicate thing.
It is,
but it does need to be said, and it needs to be said with pride, because he would be proud of you, and he would be very proud of what the band has done. He would have totally agreed with it, because who would want to see anything they've worked so hard to do and to build crumble because they're gone?
Yep.
Nobody.
No.
You know. So it made sense.
Yeah. Yep.
What has it been like for you to step into that role in the situation that it came from, and to be in your first band that was already an established band that was playing shows, booking big shows, and already had a record to promote?
I mean, it was just kind of a weird feeling because, I mean, obviously Cody's loss took a toll on me, but playing his music and carrying his legacy with me helped me power through.
Did it?
Yeah, it really did. Just,
do you have anything on stage with you or when you practice of him? Like, do you use any of like his, which I don't know if that's a weird question.
Well,
I'm not a great interviewer, by the way. Is there anything of his that kind of keeps you alive on the aspect of the keeping his legacy going?
I mean, just the music and getting to play those songs and thinking of him looking down on us and being proud of us for what we've done.
Right.
That's where a lot of that comes from. Yeah. I don't have anything physically with me on stage, but
and I feel like you got a drum key or something.
Well, yeah.
You never know.
Right.
Some sort of good luck charm or something.
Yeah.
But he was an absolute wonderful person. I got to know him later in life. A lot of people have known Ricky and Cody and a lot of these guys for so long.
Yeah.
We crossed paths a lot, but we didn't really know each other until recently, and recently as in the last 5 years, you know.
Yeah.
Like, we really, in my opinion, started getting close as friends and talking music. And Cody was the first one to reach out to me when my new band got ready. When we were ready to play, he made he was a big part of helping us get on stage for our first show.
Uh-huh.
So our album that came out recently was dedicated to him, because I thought it was so fitting.
Yeah.
We all three were like, we make sense, you know?
Right.
We really owe a lot to him for that. So mm-hmm. He was a great guy. And what you're doing is keeping that alive mm-hmm. and helping a lot of people, especially yeah. Robbie and Lucas. So I know they have to be appreciative.
Yeah,
but I'm rambling now because it's hard to talk about this
stuff and
not get emotional, and it's hard to find a way out of talking about it. But once everything kind of calmed down and you all did get your first shows under your belt and everything, and I was very happy I was there.
Mm-hmm.
I was there to witness your first show with them, and I wanted to be there. I was at the first Wolf Island Cosmonaut show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when they were the original four-piece band. And
right.
I was there for that because I was so proud of Cody. And then to see you step up and do what you did, I was extremely proud to be in the audience for that.
Yeah.
Once everything kind of got rolling and everyone, the grieving process, you know, mm-hmm. has run, what was it like to start writing and working on new material? Were a part of.
It's a different experience. I mean, just the creative aspect of things with the three of us, mm-hmm. since I'm fresh into it, it's just flowing out of us in a sense. And
I've heard a few of the songs.
Yeah, that we played some written, of them on stage.
Yeah, the last time I saw you guys, you played maybe one song. I think it was the last song you played. It was brand new.
I can't remember
what even showed that. We've actually played a few shows together.
Yeah.
I've attended a lot of your shows, and we've played two shows.
I think two since I've been.
Since you've been in the band, yeah.
It was Cody's Benefit and Rebel Lickers.
That's right. Obviously, things are going as good as they can, and the band never really had to put the brakes on and stop for a year. I mean, obviously it took a little bit, but not very long.
No, it was about a month or two after.
Was it really? I thought it was maybe 3 months or something. That's short.
Month or two, yeah. We just kind of all got on the same page and said we've got to move on and grieve the best
learned
we can.
Learned what you needed to learn and got back on stage.
Yeah.
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 You did a good thing.
Thank you.
A lot of people couldn't do that. I mean, I would...
Yeah.
That would have to have been not only difficult, but the overwhelming amount of pressure on yourself must have been something else that nobody could experience, you know?
No, especially in that kind of situation, but I was lucky to have the right support system I needed behind me, and everybody showed their support.
You had that, but you also had clearly an incredible upbringing,
mm-hmm.
and your drumming ability is absolutely, again, it's professional. I can't word it any better than that.
You're one
of the most professional drummers I've ever encountered.
Thank you.
And I mean that, because there's a lot of great drummers out there, but, they have some moments.
Yeah.
You're just a really humble, down-to-earth person, and I like that.
I appreciate
you haven't
that.
Let any of this stuff like cloud your judgment and your path, you know. But again,
no.
I think I can say it 1,000 times before this is done, but your upbringing, the people you've been surrounded by, the people that helped guide you, you owe so much to so many, and I know that you are absolutely grateful for it.
I really am. Yeah.
It's great, and it's filled with highs and lows, but you don't seem to have changed to me. I mean, I know that you're probably hurting and lost a piece of you when he passed away, but I just can't say it enough. You really handled it as best as you could and carried on and helped the band. You know, it was a group effort. So
that was the main focus, because I know Cody wanted those guys to just have to stop for a little bit,
right.
or let Wolf Island possibly go to rest or any of that. And I know, I mean, they just came out with that new album a week or so.
It was
before.
A week, yeah.
Yeah. So they were getting a lot of buzz off of that, and they were booking shows, and they already had a couple shows booked prior to losing Cody.
Right.
So we just had to power through that and get through those. And
you did.
Yep.
Did a good thing. What can you say now that it's been a while? I mean, it's been, what, 6 months or so since
July,
as we're taping this?
Mm-hmm.
You all have a pretty routine schedule of, like, rehearsal and writing sessions and stuff like that?
Have a weekly practice, and hopefully here soon we'll start on pre-production.
Okay.
We've got a lot of new material coming out, just different vibes and stuff, and it's turning out really good so far, so I'm looking forward
good.
To seeing.
And from what I've heard live, like I was saying, I've heard at least one song, maybe two, that were brand new, written with you.
Right.
I can see that the future of this band is going to be just fine.
Yeah.
And you're keeping his memory alive, but you're also an established band. And you are the drummer of Wolf Island Cosmonauts.
Yeah.
It may have been a bittersweet role to accept, but you earned it. And, I mean, I don't know. You should be very proud. On many levels of reasons why, you know.
Yeah.
But we could drag on and on about that. But everybody's like, okay, we get the point. Let's move on. It's hard to really go from there. This is the only band you've been in.
Yeah.
One, now that you're in the music scene and getting out to discover more than the things that you've only really truly known, which would be kind of the Glasgow music scene or the bands that were in your circle of people, which is clearly Otis, Blackstone Cherry, and you mentioned Jason, so Luther must have played a role in your life. I know Cody was a huge fan of Luther.
He was.
What was he and some of the other guys that you knew listening to locally that came to you and made an impact on you?
I mean, Luther, Sixth Floor, Sons of the Revolution there for a little bit.
I mean, clearly anything John King did must have come across your radar because everybody that you know grew up listening to Sixth Floor. And, you know, obviously his bands would do shows with these other bands. And so.
Yeah, and then just a couple of the bands that we've shared the stage with, Despite the Fallen. I mean, you guys in El Astronauta and just a lot of the local music. I mean, it's been cool to witness just the support and everything that everybody's given us.
That's true. Obviously, your connection with not only all of these guys that we've already mentioned, which I think at this point we don't have to mention anymore. Cody was good friends with Ricky Hodge. Obviously, Lucas and Robbie, I think, had a strong connection to him as well.
Yeah.
Which leads you to bringing into that world as well.
Yeah.
Ricky Hodge seems to have had such a major role on people from the Glasgow area, the Barron County, Metcalf County area, Edmonton.
He really did.
When did he come into your life, and what has Ricky brought to the table for you?
I think he came into my life about a year ago. I met him through Cody.
Okay. Well, I figured I didn't know how long. I figured it would have been longer than...
Maybe at this point, I can't pinpoint it, but about
he
a
may
year
have been
two,
around, but you didn't maybe know who he was or what he was doing.
I didn't really get to know him personally until Cody brought me over there and we started jamming, and I got comfortable and everything with being around them. And
so you got to attend the school of Ricky Hodge, which is
like
a very popular.
Lucas went through the same.
Lucas went through the same, and he explained it. He was like, it's like Harry Potter, you know, you go to Hogwarts, you know. I'm like, man, I never attended this school. But I'm not from that area. So I met Ricky many, many years ago. And, again, it's one of those things where prior to MySpace and Facebook and all these things, like, we didn't drive back and forth to just Glasgow to Bowling Green. And I didn't – I knew – people through the club circuit. You would kind of meet people through bands, but it's not like I don't know. You just didn't have that instant connection. Yeah. I mean, I can message anybody
right
now and be like, hey, yeah, when's your band playing? You know, back then it was like you were lucky to find a flyer or word of mouth of so-and-so's band is good. You need to go check them out when they play next time. Ricky and I are close in age, and I know that he was in some bands around the same time that I was. But we just never really met until kind of recently. Again, it was like the same thing with Cody. I didn't really I knew these people, but I didn't know them. But now I've gotten to know him and all these other guys, and it's been really cool.
Yeah,
I'm kind of pissed off I didn't get to attend this school. I think it would have made me better.
What?
It's not too late, right?
No.
So you jammed with Ricky Hodge. Mm-hmm. You jammed with Jason. What's his last name?
No, Cleveland. Steven.
Steven Cleveland. Yeah. I don't know. Did I say Jason earlier?
Yeah.
Duh. Steven. These are two excellent musicians, great guitar players.
Yeah.
As a drummer that didn't aspire to play guitar or tinker with it, what was that like for you to be kind of just... They look at you and just kind of give you riffs to jam? Yeah. I mean, you just kind of made stuff up?
That's what Ricky did with us for a while.
You didn't go through some book of, like, learning classics and oldies and all that stuff? You just kind of made it up and learned the basics of almost, like, structure and
just
rhythm?
Just the fundamentals,
That's great.
I owe a lot of figuring out song structure to Ricky and Cody jamming out there with them. He'd pitch a riff at me and he'd say, hey, see what you can do behind this. Mm-hmm. What's the worst that can happen? And then turn it into a song.
Well,
yeah, as the drummer, I mean, that's rough.
It is a little challenging. That's pretty cool though, man. I feel like at your age, it's like to be entrusted by these people that are already 20 years of playing level, you know, and they had no issues of jamming with you. So it's not like you were unable to keep up, you know. Like, they probably could see the potential. So it might have been rough on the edges, maybe.
But sometimes,
They didn't give up on you.
No.
And that's where you are today.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So I guess, I don't know how to get more in detail on that topic, but Ricky Hodge has helped countless people. Mm-hmm. His name's been brought up probably more than anybody in the Sound Atlas history.
Well,
but you get to say that you too are one of many people that he's helped.
Yep.
That's great.
Yeah, it's an honor too, just to see what he's accomplished through his day and just to get mentored by him.
And you guys clearly grieved together.
We really did.
Because I know how close he was to Cody Glass as well, so I'm assuming that that was a big help to have each other
big
to
time.
Get through that.
Yeah. He was really close to Cody, closer than I was, because just the time that they had together and the years between.
Ricky is... He went through a rough patch, obviously, but he finally made it through the grieving process and is back to playing.
Yep.
And not too long ago from when we were speaking, you guys did a show together where Ghost and the Human Hoax has been reunited.
Yep.
It was kind of an older band, but the name's back and kind of a somewhat different lineup, but still it's the resurrection of a band that once existed but was brief. But Ghost and the Human Hoax with Ricky Hodge on guitar and you on drums with Wolf Island Cosmonauts, you guys played a show together recently in Cave City at the Dive, and I guarantee Cody Glass was smiling somewhere.
I bet
he had front row for that, because that would have made his day to see you on stage and to see Ricky back on stage.
Yeah,
you guys powered through the storm and you made it.
Mm-hmm.
And that night, I wasn't there, unfortunately, but I guarantee that night was a pivotal night for all involved, especially really anyone close to Cody. That had to be the turning point.
Yep. Just to get Ricky back on stage. Yeah. And just to see him back on stage after everything he's been through, mm-hmm. the same as the rest of us. I mean, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Definitely for us to get the opportunity to have them out for their first show back.
Yeah.
Opening
That's
for
true.
Us.
I forgot about that. I thought they had one prior to that.
Mm-mm.
That's great.
Yeah, it is.
Well, again, out of tragedy has come the only positive you can do. Yeah. I think the best part about being a musician is you don't really wither away.
No.
You're more than just a photo. When your music is captured, that's pieces of your soul. And in his case, you've got his drumming captured with Wolf Island, and his guitar playing and singing is captured with the stuff that he's done on the side with Ricky.
Whiskey Glass.
Yeah, Whiskey Glass and the old can tuck, which I always sound ridiculous when I say. And that's something to be thankful for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a powerful thing. I can't word it any differently than that. But what is on future for you and this band? Because your start was incredible. You played great venues. You've played like big shows and stages and outdoor festivals, and you got your feet not only wet, but like you dove into the ocean on this, you know?
Like
you've really hit the ground running with all the training and all the knowledge you had.
Mm-hmm.
You were prepared for things like this. You were already prepared for this.
Mm-hmm.
So what's on the horizon for you guys right now? You mentioned earlier about recording new material.
Yeah.
Clearly that's a big thing because it does help the moving forward process of anything. But what do you see coming?
I mean, just lots of shows like every other local band around here. I'm hoping got some big things up in the work for next year, and hopefully going to get a new album or EP rather out in the spring.
Well, you never know. I mean,
well, yeah,
you
just
keep writing, you might have one.
Yeah, we've got about 7 or 8 ready to go. So,
that's great.
Yeah.
Well, make 1 or 2 more, and you got a record.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's good. I'm assuming everything will be done in Glasgow.
Actually, no, in Soquel.
Monocle.
Yep.
Studios, which is
John
Lahan's.
Yeah.
He built it, right?
Right. Yep.
So that's his.
Yeah, that's his.
But it's technically Blackstone Cherry's home base now.
Pretty much.
They'll probably record every record they do in there.
Yeah. The Volume 2 to the Black to Blues was recorded out there.
Right. That was the first thing. I'm assuming that was.
I believe
done.
So. Yes.
God, I've said the word assuming a lot tonight. When I listen back to these, I find out that I get stuck on one word and I just repeat it over and over. So, yeah. I'm sorry, everybody listening. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of the future because I was really impressed with the songs I heard you play recently.
Thank you.
And Robbie and Lucas are phenomenal musicians.
They are.
So you've got a great team.
Yeah.
So you're just doing your thing.
Yeah. Just being a 3-man band, it's easy for all of us to kind of showcase our skills through one song and not overcompensating or overdoing anything. So just the vibe is going
Speaking
really
good. Of not overcomplicating things, your drumming is, I would say, in the simple form. You don't have a big giant kit and tons of cymbals and all that stuff. You've got like the basic drum setup. I've noticed you're playing Natal.
Yep.
So is that like, did you get an endorsement or you just got the kit?
No, actually, interesting fact about that kit, it's John Fred got that kit.
Oh, he did?
And actually on Kentucky, on the bonus edition of it, they did a One Republic song.
Oh.
Cover called Love Runs Out.
Oh, that's cool.
And he used that drum kit on that song, and I was gifted that from my parents for Christmas a couple years back.
Nice.
So
yeah. It's really pretty. Is that like the root beer sparkle finish, or
I don't know?
Maybe it's, in the lighting I've looked at, it had that like brownish,
kind of got a bronze copper feel to it. It's an odd wrap on that kit.
It is an odd wrap, but they're kind of I wouldn't say they're a newer company.
Yeah,
but new as in 10 years.
Yeah, I believe Jim Marshall is the parent company of Nadal.
That's weird.
I believe.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. There's a lot of connections in those worlds.
Right.
I haven't played them, but the guy that plays drums in my band, Corey Link, we did a show together, and you had the house kit. And he played your kit, and I remember after the show, he was like, man, those toms sounded really good. Yeah. That was a nice kit. So, obviously, you're happy with that.
Big time.
I've noticed that there's a photo of you on Facebook with the kit. At the practice house, of all places.
Yeah.
Legendary landmark in music history in this town, or this area.
That was my senior photos back in.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And took the drum kit out there and set up, and John Lahan actually shot those
pictures.
Did
he do the photos?
Yep.
Man, those guys are super talented.
He's a jack of all trades.
He really is. And I've seen Chris's photos lately.
I know.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
He needs to have like an art show somewhere.
Something, yeah.
Such a great connection to have.
Yeah.
That is really cool, man. You play Zildjian cymbals, if I'm not if I am correct. Have you tinkered with other stuff, or is that just
not really
the brand that seems to be the winning brand?
Yeah, so far I haven't really got into experimenting with anything else, but Zildjian has so many various series of cymbals, it's impossible to get through all of them and test them out. But I've got the Zildjian A Customs and K Customs all around.
Very nice.
Yeah.
See, you're not messing around.
No.
You're not some beginner.
No.
What kind of sticks do you use?
Vader Power 3A sticks.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Vader's good.
They really are.
Before I gave up drumming, I was using Vader 5A's. Extreme.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah.
They're good sticks.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's your drumming career.
Yeah.
So now that you're in this music scene and you're out playing shows and stuff, who have you become a fan of? And what stands out to you that's inspiring you today?
I mean, just a lot of, like I said earlier, a lot of the bands we've shared stage with so far.
But do you go out and see people? Like, I know you're still under 21, but do you, like, go to Riblickers or any outdoor concert events that have local music involved? Have you seen anything like that?
Yeah. Kiss Kiss Bang played at Riblickers a few months back. I went and seen, well, it was actually our show, but you guys and Solo Solar.
Oh, East yeah. That was a great show.
I know, it really
Shaq
was.
Shaq in Space.
Yeah. And just getting to see that kind of music, just the variety that Glasgow and Bowling Green has to offer.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That was a good night. It was kind of an odd night because of the time of year. And
right.
What was that around?
September?
No, it was the beginning of November.
Oh, yeah.
Of 2019. And it was like coming right out of Halloween. So I think people were like, I'm not going out this weekend. I went out last weekend.
Yeah.
But, you know, Glasgow can be fickle. It was a cold night, so they had the doors closed at Riblickers. And
it's just a come or go in Glasgow.
Yeah, yeah, and there were two bands. Well, we're not very well known yet, and Solar Disco Force had never played at
Riblickers,
Glasgow, so I don't think anybody up there knew anything about them. But it was a great show, man.
Yeah.
It was really fun, and I'm hoping to do that again, because how do you deny three bands that involve space?
Yeah, I know.
It's too cool. It's a great promo opportunity in its own right. Man, I don't know what else I'm missing here. What am I missing here?
I don't know. We covered most of the bases.
Well, tell me one thing. I guess I can just go off track then. Who are your influences? Not locally, but just overall, like drumming-wise. Who are your big idols?
Steven Adler from Guns N' Roses.
Really?
And,
first person I've ever heard say that.
Just, well, I mean, I grew up around Guns N' Roses on the radio and such. And listening to him and how he played for the song and everything, even though things kind of got a little crazy there with the band there for a little
bit. It did, but I mean, if you listen to Use Your Illusion, he's on Civil War.
Yeah.
The rest of the album's Matt Sorum.
Yeah.
You can tell the difference. If you're
you
a
really
drummer,
can.
It stands out. Matt's very flamboyant and a lot of thrills and frills, you know what I mean? Like, and Steven was the solid, basic four-piece kit drummer, you know, and he was extremely...
He served the song, though.
Oh,
for
was
sure.
Great. He was great. So I get it.
Yeah.
I always thought Adler was a phenomenal drummer.
Yeah. And then, I mean,
but I like the less is more approach.
Right.
And to see a band come out in the 80s that had the Ringo kit.
Yeah.
Everybody else had these big double bass, multiple toms and cymbals. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was very stripped down. I mean, they were just a full blown rock and roll band. And that moment in time, I mean, I was alive when it happened. It was an absolutely amazing thing to watch.
Yeah.
And it was so good.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that. Yeah. Steven Adler's outstanding.
Then, of course, you got John Bonham and Danny Carey from Tool. I mean, he's just a phenomenal drummer.
Yeah.
I mean, just the time signatures and stuff that he can operate in, like it's
he's
nothing.
Like a mad scientist when it comes to drumming. And I see pictures of his kit sometimes, and
he goes over the top.
It's crazy.
He makes use of it, though.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He really does.
Yeah. But it looks like when I see his drum kit, I think of like something you would see at the Children's Museum.
Something
kind of strange thing
I know.
That you can go in and turn and you know, it's like Legos or something. It's a trip to look at.
Yeah, roto toms and gongs behind them and all this. My good Lord,
when are you gonna start getting roto toms, man?
No,
half the stages in this town can't even fit roto toms.
No. Sometimes it's hard to get a three-piece band.
It really is.
But, yeah,
I can see that. Yeah. I played the dive a few times. It was a very interesting challenge.
Yeah,
the stage became a drum riser.
That's all it was for us, too. Yeah.
But that's a hell of a place to play.
It is.
I had fun up there.
With it being the only bar in Cave City and having finally bringing rock music back to Cave City.
Yeah, and you were too young, obviously, to experience it unless you got snuck in. But did you ever see anything at the factory?
Mm-mm. No. There's a couple times that the sixth floor Blackstone Cherry would go over to the convention center over there.
That's true.
The Toys for Tots thing around the holidays.
You got to see those?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I think Mike Bull's old band, Sinners and Saints, played up there too, I believe.
Yes. Great band.
Yeah,
that's somebody I haven't mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up around Mike Bull.
Yeah, he was the guitarist in Trip.
Oh, that's band. Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. I knew that, but I was, of course, slipped my mind. Sinners and Saints is, to this day, I listen to that EP all the time. Jason had it.
Uh-huh.
Like, they didn't print hard copies.
I don't think so, no.
But he emailed me the four-song demo that they recorded at David Barracks, and I converted it to a CD, and that way I could listen to it all the time. And to this day, I still listen to that all the time.
Yeah.
I thought Frankie and Jason were a great combination musically. Mike was a great drummer. I'm really surprised he didn't want to stick to drumming.
Yeah.
I think he was a really good drummer.
He's always had a knack for guitar, so that's where he stuck with for a while there.
Yeah, he's still playing guitar, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in a while. There's that word again. I haven't seen him in a while.
No, I haven't.
But
either.
The last time I talked to him, he had gotten into some band recently
because
they played a show in Glasgow, give or take about, I don't know, back in the summer, maybe spring, summer 2019. I have no idea what the name of it was.
I can't remember.
It was neat to see him back though, because he and I were in a Mud River Revival together.
Yeah, John King's.
And it was great to work with him when we worked together, but the band fell apart and I left. And I don't know if he took a break. It seemed like he took a break for a little while, and then he got back into it.
Yeah, he stuck around with John there for a little bit, I believe.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that Mike is the one that brought you to my attention. Because I think he said something to me about wanting to teach you drum things or something. And now that I know your history, I'm like, what would I have taught this guy? He knows everything. But I think that's what happened. And that would have been in 2014.
Yeah.
So yeah. Does that ring a bell with you?
I believe so.
You came to one of our shows.
Yeah.
Rib Lickers.
Yeah.
We played at Rib Lickers. I believe that's where I actually... I don't know if we even met, but I just remember seeing you, and I made the connection of who you were and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird, man. That's, it wasn't that long ago, and you were a kid, and now you're an adult. It's weird.
Known each other longer than I thought.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing I think about this music scene is so interesting, is how everybody kind of knows who everyone is. You hear names, you hear band names, you get wind of things, but you don't necessarily know... personal level
until your
everything.
Path crosses and share
some people get close
something.
And some people just kind of cross paths and shake hands and do shows together, but there's not like a strong connection kind of thing or whatever.
No,
but I think that's how we met.
I believe so, yeah. And I think, didn't you guys play at one of the Music Is Me festivals?
I didn't.
You did? Oh, okay. That may have been...
It was the band before that. The
Sons of the Revolution. No, that was...
Well, there were two names.
Yeah, it was Sons of the...
And Mike was in both of them.
Yeah.
So was
Jason was in Sons of the Revolution, wasn't he?
Yes, but there was another name, and I'm drawing a complete blank on it.
I am too, because all I know is Sons of the Revolution and John King and the Muddy River Revival and Sixth Floor, obviously, but I'm not for sure.
Damn, I'm really drawing a blank.
Yeah.
It was Southbound.
Who was that?
After Southbound, it was... I want to say it was another name and then Sons of the Revolution.
I'm not for sure.
But Mike and Jason were in both of them.
Yeah. And then Jason, he switched to... He stuck with John King in the Muddy River for a minute.
Yeah, I left first. And then Jason left.
Yeah, and
then
he got
Coulter Wall.
Coulter, yeah.
And Mike was still with John up until like a year or so.
I believe so.
Like 2018, maybe. And then John reunited Sixth Floor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that had the reasoning. Like there was some kind of purpose in there. But yeah, that's how it happened. But maybe I'm confusing the fact that Mike Bull and Jason Simpson were in Sinners and Saints.
Yes.
But they were also in Sons of the Revolution. Maybe that's what I'm confusing.
Maybe.
Because they were in both bands at one point.
Yeah.
And
well, they were in all three bands because John King and Muddy River, because it was Jason and Mike for a minute.
Yep.
So, yeah.
But it was a different drummer than me. But it was something of that nature. But those two bands played Music Is Me.
Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
That was like, that happened like a year before, I guess, I came into the picture or something.
Gotcha.
Like that. And I was hearing all that stuff about that.
Yeah.
You know, but growing up in that area, you probably have some history of these places. As a kid, especially, did you go to Backstage Music and Music Is Me when it was a music store on Reynolds Road?
Music Is Me, yes, because that's where John Fred at first started his lessons.
Oh, he was actually giving lessons.
And through Music Is Me, because whenever Ben and John owned it. And then he moved his lessons to the park in Edmonton, Mark Park.
Really?
Into, I think... I want to say it became a homeless shelter now. It was just a area they had available to rent up there. Mm-hmm. And then they moved that into there. So that's why the drum lessons came to a halt.
Interesting.
But,
well, that's a good reason, though.
Well, yeah. Helps out the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I
don't have any...
You didn't go to Backstage Music?
It wasn't around whenever...
I guess that would have been closed by the time you were getting into it, huh?
But I did go up there and into that building right after it closed, and then Dave Barrick moved up there for a minute.
Yep.
And then now he moved down back behind the plaza.
He's behind the plaza now, and I have not been there yet, but I've seen pictures. It looks really cool.
Get a good drum sound in that room with it being open like that.
Yeah. It sounds great from what I've heard recorded there so far.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool, man. Is that the only other... Was there another music store up there? Or?
No. I know...
The Music Is Me that eventually ended up in Steve Jewell's.
And Boone.
And Steve and Boone had it on the square.
Yes. Where over by Yancey's.
Yeah, where Yancey's is now. Yeah. It's like the building next to it or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was there for a brief minute. I went to that location more than the other one. This is when I started making the connections to the Glasgow people, which I had never really done before. I don't know why, because everything was here.
Yeah.
And then I would always go to Nashville for stuff. But I was like, I got to check out this Glasgow place. Seems like all the great people are up there. And they are.
Yeah.
It's a phenomenal town. What's that like for you to have grown up in it and have witnessed all that stuff and to now be a part of it?
I don't know. It's just a weird feeling, honestly, just going from being a fan of all these bands to either opening up or playing over some of these bands or just getting them.
To trip you out?
Yeah, it does. Like, seeing myself on stage from a outsider's perspective and having guys like Andrew and you and everybody watching me, it's just...
Nah, I'm nobody, though.
Well, I mean...
There's nothing...
I don't know about that.
There's nothing to be afraid of on that. I'm actually... I've said it 100 times. I mean, it... Watching you is like, damn, I wish I had my shit together when I was 18. Because... I get mad at the mistakes I feel like that I had made. You are really smart about your approach, and I mean, it's just, I can't say it enough, man. You're so professional. It's like you're light years ahead of your time, and that's a good gift to have. You know, a lot of musicians that have that don't really realize it. They're just being themselves, you know.
But right.
From an outsider's perspective, that's how I look at it. So don't lose that.
Yeah.
If you do anything through the rest of your time of playing drums, don't lose that. Just remember that 12-year-old kid and don't get lost in any of the crap that comes along the way.
Yeah.
Because it will come along eventually, you know.
I just kind of... I got lucky to step up into a well-established band that's always kind of, they already kind of got through the ringer, so to speak.
No, that's true.
Got through starting out and finding members and all that. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of stepped up and it was kind of there. So
did a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, what have we missed? Is there anything you walked in here going, man, I hope he talks about this. Talk about that, because I'm just babbling.
No, not really.
I've had too much coffee. Here at Spencer's Coffee in downtown Bowling Green. Not a sponsor, but, you know, they love me here.
Yeah.
I give them free publicity. Well, you, sir, are about to go play a show.
Mm-hmm. Over at Tidballs.
Over at Tidballs.
And Outhouse Etiquette's reunion.
Yeah, according to Cody... this is their final show?
I believe so. They're coming back because it's actually Rob's birthday.
Oh, it is Rob's birthday. Yeah. Excellent.
And I think they're coming back just for tonight, and it'll be...
Doc playing drums?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good.
Yeah, yeah.
So the last time I saw them was that lineup.
Okay, yeah.
Everybody, you all call him Chris.
No, I call him Doc.
I call him Doc. That's what I know him as, Doc Chapman. But
yeah.
Most other people call him Chris Chapman, but... That guy was playing drums, and the last time I saw them, or the last few times I saw them, was that lineup from that record.
Okay, yeah.
And great drummer.
He is.
So, again, another show that you get to... Well, you actually did this recently. He's the drummer for Ghosts and the Human Hoax.
Mm-hmm.
But, Chris Doc Chapman is a phenomenal drummer.
Yep.
Once again, you get to share the stage at a wonderful... local music venue with a local legendary drummer.
Yep. Legendary band overall, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They really made an impact.
They did.
And, of course, everyone knows that Cody Meek is so rooted with the Pilot years and all that stuff. Did you hear a lot of stuff like that growing up?
Not really, no.
No?
Mm-mm.
That's interesting. But I guess it depends on who you would have known and been talking about. But I've heard stories about the Parrish Center and things of that nature. I didn't know anything about it.
No,
it was out of my range by the time I'd heard about it. It was already over.
Yeah.
I missed the train. But you've come from an incredible background of music, and the people that have guided you and helped point you in the right direction are some of the finest musicians that this local music scene has ever had.
Yeah, they really are.
You have really earned your place in this music scene.
Thank you.
I don't feel like, even though out of the tragedy of Cody passing away, they could have auditioned people.
Right.
But it just made sense.
Yeah.
You were the guy.
I mean, it was just kind of a, I think, like, speaking for them in a sense, I think it was kind of a no-brainer because they saw how much influence Cody had on me in the last few months he was around, and just seeing, like, hearing Cody talk about my playability. And I think one time we went down to Guitar Center in Nashville, and he got a really nice Dean Martin guitar, and we just kind of jammed out in the drum room at Guitar Center, and he said he couldn't.
He was eager to see you get into something.
Right, he was.
But he had, obviously nobody had any idea that it would be this.
Right.
But I don't know if earning it is the correct word, but you definitely deserved it.
Yeah.
You were the right person for the job, and you have it because of not only the credentials, but his faith in you. And I mean, it's just hard to deny it. It's hard to interview you without talking about Cody Glass.
I know.
And I knew coming into this it would be hard and unavoidable.
Yeah.
But even you mentioned it. Like, you know, I know we're going to talk about Cody. And we're like, I don't know how not to, you know.
Right.
Like, but you just don't have 10 bands to talk about. You don't have this incredibly thick history of all these things that you've done. But it is cool to hear your story. I knew it was going to be a cool story, and I was eager to get it. And I thank you so much for meeting me here at Spencer's Coffee, where I get a dollar off every time I mention it. I don't. And go rock the house at Tidballs, my friend.
We will,
and
for sure.
Not only tonight, but from this point on, I wish you nothing but luck and success and good vibes and whatever Care Bear feelings I have to offer, because I've been in your shoes. Everything that you're going to encounter from this age on, I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got your head on straight, and you're with the right people.
For sure.
On and off stage to be guiding you in the right path. Yeah. So keep it up.
Thank you.
And do your thing.
I will. For sure.
Eli, thank you so much for meeting me here. Yeah. And thank you for being a part of this music scene and sharing your story with the Sound Atlas.
Thank you.
Bye.
See ya.